So, David McCulloch, so tell us something a little about yourself so that our listeners can know who we're talking with and what we're talking about.
Well, I'm Professor of the History of the Church in the University of Oxford, and I've been here for nearly a quarter of a century. I have studied mostly Tudor history, though my research and books have gone very much wider than that. Mm. So the whole of Christianity has been one of them, and I did a TV series on the back of that. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, my present book is the biography of Thomas Cromwell, the great statesman of the Tudor era. So that's sort of going back to roots, because when I started my research in the University of Cambridge, it was on Tudor subjects, and so the manuscripts which lie behind this book are the sort of things that I looked at all those years ago, back in the 1970s.
Yes. So what was it that triggered your interest in history generally?
It was a family thing. My father was a parish priest in Suffolk, and even before then, he was an army chaplain before then. We were always interested in history, fascinated by history, scrambled round ruins. We talked about history at the lunch dinner table as other people talk about football.
Yes.
And so it was just there. And it was absolutely natural that when I went to university, I studied history.
And did you have any particular authors or writers were you the sort of individual who could see across the whole range of writing and views of particular characters at particular times in history?
As an undergraduate starting out, I studied all over the place. So the Roman Empire, 20th century France, the lot, rather alarmed by tutors, I think. But I settled down on the Tudors bit by bit. And so when it came to the research choice, well, what are you going to do when you do your PhD, your doctorate?
Yeah.
I thought, well, which direction should I go in? Could it be the Weimar Republic in 20th century Europe?
Right.
Or will it be Tudor England? And I was too lazy to learn German at the time, so I decided on Tudor England.
Yes.
I kept my fascination with the 20th century, with all its horrors.
Of course.
But Tudor England has remained what I actually know about, the documents that I've gone through at huge length in that 40 years and more.
Yeah, so if you're putting together a book like this one, Thomas Cromwell, A Life, the amount of reading and research, the primary sources that you would have to examine would be extensive, wouldn't they?
Yes, they would. We're very lucky in Thomas Cromwell because we've got his papers, which were confiscated when he was arrested by King Henry VIII and executed. And there are thousands on thousands of those. But it's a quite funny archive, actually, because it's the letters written to him.
Right.
And you might say that was perfectly natural. You keep the letters written to you. But you'd also, if you were a systematic Tudor politician, keep the last draft of the letters written to you. So we need to know what happened to them. We can't know for certain.
No.
But I'm pretty sure that what happened was that when his household heard he'd been arrested, they burned the letters, what you might call the out tray, because they thought those are the things which would give him trouble, which would convict him.
Yes.
And it, of course, it didn't work.
No.
But it means that this huge, huge archive is very skewed. It's fascinating, but we don't have his voice.
No.
So one of the interests in writing this pretty long biography
Yes.
was to try and find his voice in the middle of all this. And I think I've done a bit of that.
Yeah, that's I suppose there's educated guesswork to a degree, isn't there, on the person's character? And if somebody has written something in a letter to you, then it's probably because you've written something in a letter to them, which has prompted the response.
Yes, so you're getting the impress of the man all the time from other people's voices.
Yeah,
that's quite a subtle thing, and it's one of the fascinations of doing it.
Yes.
And just glimpsing the man. And I think I've gone a good deal further than a lot of authors have been able to do on that.
Yes. And how would you sum up him as a man, having spent all that time researching?
He was enormously talented. He had an eye for detail, but he also had an amazing ability to seize the chance, to seize the main chance. And he was in power. real power for 9 years, which is not long.
No.
But in that time, in the 1530s, he made a huge, huge difference to England and actually Ireland and Wales.
Mm-hmm.
Set them on patterns which are still there, for better or ill.
Mm.
Turned Wales towards patterns of English government,
mm-hmm.
Which are still sort of there.
Mm-hmm.
In Ireland, it failed, but the failure took until the 20th century. England's efforts to make Ireland like itself went on, but you see them starting in Thomas Cromwell's time. So those are really basic things. That's what makes him fascinating.
Mm.
Plus the fact that he steered the Protestant Reformation under Henry VIII in directions which the king didn't want it to go. And that's one of the reasons that he fell from power.
Yeah.
But those directions went on.
Yeah.
And so England became a basically Protestant country. It remained a Protestant country until I was a boy in the 1950s.
Mm. Mm.
And so all those things make him really, really important. And it's very important for a historian, therefore, to try and recapture the man at the centre of all that.
Would you have liked to have lived at that time?
No. No, I mean, historians don't want to live in the past because we know what it was like.
Absolutely.
And anything before anesthetic, really.
Yes.
But also, I mean, the politics of the 1530s are just a snake pit.
Mm.
You wouldn't want to be around.
No.
Very few people survived at the top under Henry VIII. And Cromwell wasn't one of them.
No.
No, I wouldn't have wanted to go anywhere near the court of Henry VIII.
No. And yet it's interesting, isn't it? On the coinage of the realm, we have the link with that period, with the you know, the imprint around the edge of the coins.
Yes, we do. Defender of the Faith, which is still a title that Queen Elizabeth II holds, which Henry VIII was given from the Pope. Huge irony. I mean, Henry VIII was not a man who was very prone to irony or self-knowledge. And so he kept this title because he felt it was described him rather well.
Yes.
Even if the Pope had given it to him.
Yes. And he'd broken away from the Roman Church.
Yeah. Defender of which faith?
There is quite a kind of an irony in that, isn't there? But yes. I dare say most people looking at the coinage would see those letters DG and
Fid Def
and kind of wonder what's all that about.
Yep.
But of course, having grown up with a bit of Latin myself, then you get to know what that is and you realise, as you say, the irony of the situation. So let's just talk about a little musical choice, just to kind of break the conversation a bit. Piano in the room in which we're doing this little interview, so that must be a link with the piano and your musical favourites.
Yes, I love the piano, I play the piano, and what I particularly like, because it suits this lovely piano I've got, is the lush romantic music of France, end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th.
Mm.
The very mad composer Eric Satie is one of my favourites.
I see, yes. It's not a name that I, until you mentioned it, isn't a name that is familiar to me, but it shall be now, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. He was mad to the extent that when he died, they found his flat was stuffed full of umbrellas. He used to walk around Paris with an umbrella, and apparently it was a different one every day.
Really?
And then, besides Satie, Francis Poulenc, wonderfully witty composer.
Yes.
I also play the organ, which I can't do in this room, but I can in a church.
Right.
And very different music then, the music of earlier periods, the 16th, 17th, 18th century, which I love. So it depends where I am as to what sort of music will come out of me.
Modern music? Do you have any?
I used to love punk rock.
Did you?
I adored The Clash, The Ramones, saw The Ramones three times.
Did you? Yes.
So I'm very wide musical taste.
Is that called eclectic?
I think it is.
Yes, I like the word eclectic.
It's a bit like my taste in history.
Yes.
Over the place.
I think, I'd spoken with a gentleman, Glenn Matlock, who was with the Sex Pistols.
So
there you are. He was considered the least Sex Pistol of the Sex Pistols because he was considered more Beatles than Sex Pistols.
All right.
And his style today is still very much in that genre, if you might say, but it's certainly not Sex Pistols music.
No, it certainly recalls that summer of 77.
You've only got to mention the name, haven't you?
Yeah.
So is there a period of history that you would like to concentrate on more now? I know that you're very much taken up with probably lectures like the one at Stratford, which as we speak you'll be doing, I think, because we're Friday evening and you're doing some. Is it Friday or
7:30? Yes.
7:30. Yeah. Well, I'm on air 7 till 9. So there you are. You see, we should be able to make. It'll be too late to fill any seats, but I shall do a little bit of. Facebook.
Buy the book, folks. Buy the book.
Absolutely, buy it. It'll be a bedtime read for you. So, is there a period of history that you would like to cover more fully?
Well, the other half of my historical work is very, very broad, and it's been on the history of the church, and that's what I'm doing next. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write a book on sex and the church throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from the ancient period, the roots of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Greek and Roman and Jewish,
mm-hmm.
to the present day.
Mm.
It's a subject which really matters because the world is split now about matters of family and gender and sex.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to try and do that wide-ranging thing I've done in other books and try and bring a bit of sanity and balance to the subject and see what the past was really like, not the myths about it.
This is the hard task for the historian, I think.
It is, but that's what we do. We try and bring sanity and complication to people's understanding of history, because simple stories about history are always wrong, and they produce very bad answers in people. They produce unconsidered, mad answers to the future based on bad stories about the past. And that's really the value of what historians do.
Yes, yes. And of course, your view might be at odds with another historical writer, I guess. I mean, that's a possibility, isn't it?
They might be, yes.
That's where the balance comes in, isn't it?
It is. And if we all agreed and we knew what the past was about, then history would be very boring because no one would need to write another history book or buy another history book.
Exactly. And you would like people to buy, obviously, your works as well, which I'm sure I might get around to having a read of. Of Thomas Cromwell.
I hope you do.
Yes, indeed. And increase my own, what shall we say, understanding of the topic and the subject and the man.
Mm.
And the man. So, no future ambitions beyond that then, really?
I'm on the point of retirement, so I think one book at a time now.
Yes, yes.
Let's not make any rash plans.
No, and of course, you're judging...
The Wolfson Prize.
So who is that awarded to? What is the Wolfson Prize?
Oh, this is a very generous gesture on the part of the Wolfson family, Lord Wolfson, who's been very generous to all sorts of charities and good causes. But one passion of the old Lord Wolfson, Leonard Wolfson, was history.
Mm.
And so he founded a prize for the best book written in this country by a historian, which the public would enjoy.
Yes.
So it's not just that it's very good history.
Right.
It's history that people could pick up and say, gosh, I'm learning something.
I enjoyed that.
Exactly.
I couldn't put it down.
So we look at a whole range of books. I mean, it's usually about 160 every year. And there are four judges. We all read these books. I say we process them.
Yes.
We decide whether it's worth persevering with each of these 160.
So what would you say is that in the first chapter? Can you get a sense of a book?
You get a sense quite quickly
in the first
of
chapter.
A book. Yes. Some are too specialist.
Yes.
Some are just what you might call good journalism.
Regurgitating
stuff. And those are the two extremes. But in the middle, very interesting set of books which are really soundly based on new research, taking a new cut across existing things, and opening up a subject in a way that people will say, oh gosh, now I think I understand this much better. And every year we've got £40,000 to give to the winner and £3,000 for runners-up, four runners-up. So everyone on the shortlist wins.
Ah, well, you see. And are these previously published authors?
They're all published... Well, some of them are new, and some of them are very long-experienced authors. That's the nice thing about it, that with this shortlist, we can give a boost to the beginnings of people's careers. We had a wonderful book 2 years ago on sleep in Tudor England.
Ooh.
And that was the first book that this lady had written, a young scholar. And it was a delight to be able to salute her at the beginning of her career.
Yes.
But then we've got very mature scholars who are really sort of, rounding things up, one might say.
Tidying up, yes.
And that's also glorious to see someone whose career has produced such a marvellous piece of work.
Yes, yes. So you can always put on your CV, can't you, a nominated, shortlisted for, and that becomes part of your kind of CV.
Publishers love that.
Yes, it's kind of like enhancing your reputation. It is. You've been shortlisted. It doesn't really matter what the prize is.
Yeah.
Shortlisted. It's rather like saying Oscar nominations.
Indeed.
You can have X number of Oscar nominations and that kind of ups your price,
doesn't
it? It so does. To speak, for the author. So there we are. So you're going to be kept busy, obviously, even in retirement, I think.
I certainly am.
Yes, 160 books a year, that's 3 a week. One every 2 days, yes. You'd need the energy to do that. So thank you very much, Dermot, for taking the time to entertain me and have a chat about the book, Thomas Cromwell, A Life, which we'll be speaking about at the Stratford Literature Festival at the very moment we're speaking. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.